You're listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. Today we'll hear a special report on homelessness and the role of libraries in their lives, and we take a look at gay marriage on the 10th anniversary of its legalization in Iowa. But first, an update on some of the services available to those who were recently hit by severe flooding. The floods impacted hundreds of thousands of Iowans. Parts of Siouxland were declared disaster areas after flooding on March 12th. The community of Hornick was especially hard hit. FEMA is now working to make sure people who need assistance get the help they need. Siouxland Public Media Sheila Brummer talked with FEMA spokesperson Rosie Ray.
Rosie, the most important thing, people need to register for individual assistance through FEMA.
Hi, thank you for having me here and this great opportunity to get this accurate information for the survivors of this tremendous flood. The first step is to get registered. FEMA encourage to people that are affected to get registered, and there's so many ways you can register. You can do it by phone, call it on 1-800-621-3362. Also, you can get registered on your smartphone. We have a smart app. So, and there's a FEMA app. You can download it in your phone, and you have it in English and Spanish. Also, you can get registered on the website. It's a disasterassist.gov.
But that's the key. If you don't register, you do not get the assistance, and that deadline is quickly approaching.
Yes, it's on May 23rd, and it's just in the blink of an eye. It's the registration process is going to require a few documents from you. And in the meantime, when you get to get those documents downloaded or get the those documents for you to get registered, it takes maybe some time. So it's important for you to start now the registration so they can give you time to get ready and prepare for it.
Mm-hmm. And they also can stop by in person. Western Iowa Tech out here at the Security Institute, you have office set up here for people to stop by. And there's other resources available, too.
Yes, we are a disaster recovery center here at the Western Iowa Tech College. And operations hours are Monday to Saturday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. And also we are open on Sundays from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. So besides FEMA assistance programs, we also have a Small Business Administration, which is the other federal agency that work with us and supplies and supports disasters programs for businesses. Also, we have nonprofit organizations like United and Red Cross, and they also support the affected survivors with other assistance programs.
There's also representatives from FEMA. You have a team going door to door. You did so in Hornick, and you believe you got that community covered, correct? I think that area.
Yes.
But you're also going through other spots, too, in the Sioux City area.
Yes. This disaster survivors assistance is a staff that covers what we do in the Disaster Recovery Center. They do it on the ground. So they visit door to door and they get assured that everybody who is in need get assistance from us.
And it's too early to tell the numbers of people yet who need assistance in this region, right?
It's too early, yes.
Too early.
But we have received from now that we have like 2 or 3 days open. We have around 30 people visiting our centers.
That came to the one that was located here.
Yes.
And there are signs. You can see the signs as you drive up to Western Iowa Tech where to go, where that Security Institute is located. People may think that they can't qualify. I know that we also had some people who had water in the basement. Are there certain cases where FEMA wouldn't cover the water in the basement?
Well, it depends of every individual situation. That's why we have like 8 different assistance programs, and it depends of a situation, and depends of members of the family. Depends if there are also elderly people, major members in the family. So it's case to case situation. That's why we have those.
So if you don't know, it's better to check it out. and get the potential assistance you might need.
Yes, that's what we encourage people to get registered, because if you get registered, then you can we can analyze the situation of your case. And don't discard yourself. Try. Come. If you lost your fridge, your stove, your bedroom, your things that really are important for you to be secure in your home, you come by and visit our centers and we can assist you.
Or you can make a phone call too. What's the phone number to call once again?
Yes.
To qualify for assistance.
Yes, it's 1-800-621-3362.
So it's 1-800-621-FEMA as well. And then what's the website?
It's the website. We have a website which is www.fema.gov. And also, if you want to get immediately registered, you visit disasterassistance.gov.
All right. And you came from Puerto Rico to be here to help flood assistance. I know that where you lived was devastated by a hurricane.
Yes. Most of the staff that working with FEMA, we have been survivors in some point, because it's flood or storms or when hurricanes in the whole United States. So yes, I am a FEMA employee, and I was a survivor too from Maria hurricane in Puerto Rico, and we are still working on it to get registered, to get recovered.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, it was nice talking to you, and I'm sure you'll keep us updated too on the situation.
Yes.
In Siouxland. All right. That was Rosie Ray. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you.
Listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media, I'm Mary Hartnett. The Iowa Association of Realtors and the National Association of Realtors are joining forces to assist flood victims in western Iowa. The NAR's Realtor Relief Flood Foundation has awarded the Iowa Association a $250,000 grant, and the IAR has contributed another $25,000. The money will be used to help individual households impacted by flooding, according to IAR President John Getty. He explains how the program works.
Each grant is $1,000, which many people have had a lot more damage than that. Here it is especially earmarked for helping with a mortgage payment or rental payments. So this is for people that are find themselves in trouble because of the floods as a renter or as a homeowner. It's quite a program. It's geared towards our fellow citizens, not just our clients. And the same thing with displaced renters also, who have to, instead of being and maybe they're not able to pay the rent because of loss of work, or they are not in the rental that they did pay for and now have a huge hotel bills that they didn't expect. So the idea is just to help and admittedly a small way for people that really need it. And, it sounds like a lot of money, and it is, but, we have $275,000, but the grants are $1,000 a piece, so you can see that. We'll be helping 275 families. And of course, there's I'm sure thousands of families that need help.
What do people need to do to apply for this money?
Well, the easiest thing is to talk to the real estate agent or their realtor members. So there's 8,400 real estate agents in the state, and there's 7,300 members of the National Association of Realtors and the Iowa Association of Realtors. So maybe the easiest thing is to, when they think of real estate, and a realtor's name should come up, and give them a contact. The other is to just contact the Iowa Realtors at flood@iowarealtors.com. I would have that, and I could give a number if you'd like me to.
Sure, sure.
And so it's, that's 800-532.
What's it looking like up there in terms of flood damage? Certainly around here, around some of the Missouri River areas and the tributaries, we've seen some flooding. A lot worse, though, you know, the further south you go on the Missouri and the tributaries and in Nebraska, it's been very bad. What's it like up where you are in Spencer?
Well, in Spencer, we're very, a lot of flooding. A lot of flooding in the farmland areas, et cetera. Very little flooding in Spencer proper. We have some good diking systems, some surge pumps that really kick in, and we don't get the flood water like other places get. But there's certainly some isolated areas where, well, there's people that have never had water since 93, and they got water in their basements. A lot of ground saturation. But up south, and boy, I tell you, especially along the Missouri corridor there, south of Sioux City, just amazing flooding, and they really do need some help.
What should people do if they have issues or problems concerning flooding and their homes and real estate and land and how they should deal with it?
I think it's important that any time that you have any question related to real estate, and of course in this flood here, is to talk to your local real estate agent. They'll be able to be a source to the resource. And this is a case in point too, that talk to your real estate agent or go to that iowarealtors.com site and make an application. It's well worth the time. It's a couple pages of the application, but it's not intrusive and it's not onerous at all. It's just trying to be responsible and make sure that the money goes to the people that really need it. So I would just say don't be shy and don't wait until tomorrow or next week because, it's limited funds.
That was John Getty, the president of the Iowa Association of Realtors, talking about the $1,000 grants that are available to people who have been hurt by flooding in western Iowa. When dealing with flooding or other natural disasters, we can be overwhelmed by the damage and devastation, and the resulting financial and emotional stress can be hard to handle. However, Iowans can turn to Iowa Concern from Iowa State University Extension and Outreach. It's a toll-free number with live chat capabilities and a website. Iowa Concern services are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at no charge. The service provides access to counselors and an attorney for legal education, as well as information and referral services for a wide variety of topics. Dr. David Brown, Human Services Specialist in Family Life, teaches mental health first aid and assists with Iowa Concern.
Well, we're training people to do a variety of things with mental health first aid. Right now, we're really focusing on our staff, but we will probably be expanding that to different communities that may be struggling, like those in the flood. But we're training them to, number one, understand the signs and symptoms of beginning phases of mental health disorders, such as depression, anxiety, and substance use disorders, which after very long periods of stress may show up, certainly in flooded areas and things like that. But we're also teaching them on how to interact and listen to individuals who may be struggling with those issues, look for resources, how to assist them in resources, and what type of self-help strategies that they may want to do also to help themselves.
And this piece that in it that I don't hear about, you talk about dealing with stress that's caused by events like this major flooding, because often we talk about, you know, insurance and going to FEMA, getting disaster assistance.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. There's a huge amount of stress that goes in that. And I think why we're really focusing, excited about mental health first aid, simply because if that stress continues over long periods of time, it could turn into more severe issues relating to anxiety, depression, substance use disorders, things like that. So yeah, there's all sorts of stress going on right now related to the floods.
Are you hearing from people? Are they calling in on the number?
Well, I think they are starting to call in to Iowa Concern Hotline. That number certainly has been in the forefront of what we're trying to do as far as providing also some relief that's available 24/7, which would be the Iowa Concern Hotline.
Seems like there's been a lot of stress for farmers in the last year with low commodity prices, the tariff-caused trade war, and now the flooding. It must be very difficult.
It's very, very difficult right now in the farming community. You know, some of the things we've also done, we've offered some training related to stress management and some of the same things, how to the signs and symptoms of stress and do some how to kind of mitigate some of that stress. We've provided programming through the Crop Advantage program, which is a series of events that were offered in January. And that impacted over 2,000 producers and agribusiness professionals across the state. We've done some training on stress management and signs of stress at the Integrated Crop Management Program. There's also a variety of programs going on at local county extension offices as well, involve folks that have been trained in that program to offer that program.
The Extension Service is involved in so many areas. I think sometimes when we don't know much about what you do, we think of, you know, the guy that used to come to the fields and look at the corn or perhaps go to the town meeting hall and show everyone how to do this or that. But you have such a large number of areas that you work on.
We really do. Now, the other thing we're hoping to offer down the road in areas that are flooded because of the stress also impacts relationships, that level of stress. So we have some relationship education programs that can assist couples to really improve their relationship, and that's been really important given the amount of stress that couples and families under related to the floods as well. Yeah, I just want to put another plug for the Iowa Concern Hotline, because again, that has not only it's a toll-free phone number, but we also have live chat capabilities and a website. It's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at no charge. We do have access to stress counselors and attorney for legal education, as well as information referral for a variety of different topics. So obviously you can also call, you have questions about your insurance cover, about legal rights regarding the flood. You can also talk to Iowa Concern Hotline as well.
That was Dr. David Brown of Iowa State University Extension Outreach Services. He helps train extension specialists in mental health first aid and helps administer the Iowa Concern program. The program provides free 24-hour help with stress and financial and legal issues for those hit hard by flooding and other problems. For information, you can call 1-800-447-1985. You can also go to extension.iowastate.edu. Listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. The Iowa Supreme Court on April 3, 2009, unanimously overturned a 10-year outright ban on gay marriage in the state and allowed same-sex couples to marry. While the ruling left it up to churches to decide who would be allowed to marry under their roofs, the court's ruling in the case of Varnum v. Bryan made Iowa the third state in the nation to establish marriage equality. The ruling catapulted the state into a growing conversation around marriage equality and rights for LGBTQ people that would not see a federal resolution until the Supreme Court struck down gay marriage bans across the nation in 2015.
Iowa's collective views on legalizing gay marriage have steadily changed over the years, with 46% of Iowa poll respondents ambivalent on the issue in 1996, to 62% saying marriage should only be between same-sex couples as late as 2008. Daniel Hoffman Zinnell is president of the gay rights advocacy group One Iowa. Hoffman Zinnell says back in 2009, few people thought Iowa would be one of the first few states to lead the way on marriage equality in the U.S.
Well, I think from the outside looking in, people didn't expect this to happen in Iowa, but there was a lot of strategy and a lot of planning and a lot of work involved to make this happen. So I'll give you a kind of an overview of how it all transpired and how Iowa became the third state to pass marriage equality, which is still kind of amazing to think about. So back then, marriage equality was legal in the state of Massachusetts. And there's a lot of focus on the coast because that's where they were getting a lot of traction. But Iowa has a legacy of civil rights. We passed interracial marriage 100 years ahead of the country, and just have this amazing additional items that have been a part of our history that are part of civil rights. And so the way our Constitution was written, our legacy of civil rights, we were kind of a prime location, and there really wasn't anything happening in the Midwest or the Heartland. But when things do happen in the Midwest and around here, people across the country pay attention. And so that's why Iowa was chosen as the next state to really focus on creating that dialogue to focus on marriage equality. So we had an amazing trailblazer, still have an amazing trailblazer named Sharon Malero, who is an attorney at Davis Brown Law Firm here in Des Moines. And because of her legal expertise, her knowledge of Iowa's legacy of civil rights and the way the Constitution was written, she worked with the national organizations like Lambda Legal to get a legal case started on one end. And then she helped found One Iowa specifically to focus on marriage equality. Our whole goal was to share our stories across the state, engage in dialogue with Iowans, and hopefully change their hearts and minds in support of marriage equality. So a lot of this was very strategic. So from the outside looking in, I think people were very surprised across the country. And I think a lot of Iowans were surprised, but the people who were on the inside, I think had a pretty good idea that this really could happen in Iowa, which is pretty awesome.
What kind of reaction was there when this was passed? Were there any folks in Iowa who said, "Oh, I don't want this"?
Yes, there was a lot of opposition at first, and that's where the three justices, Supreme Court justices, who were part of the ruling, they were up for a retention vote that next election, and there was a big campaign to oust them because our opposition thought they were really doing too much more. They were overexerting their power by ruling in this specific case. So unfortunately, they were ousted. But then the next election, the next justice who was on the retention vote was able, Justice Wiggins, we were able to retain him. So I think, although at first there was a lot of pushback from some of the opposition, and it seemed a little bit larger at the time, support for marriage equality has continually increased since then. I think we're now approaching like 60% of Iowans are in support of marriage equality, whereas back then, even before the ruling, I think it was about a third split.
So that's actually quite a change, isn't it, over the years?
Yes, yes. Well, I think people realize, one, the sky hasn't fallen. and I think more and more people know somebody who identifies as gay, lesbian, or bisexual. And I think that really has contributed to people's support in marriage equality, because when you know somebody and you love them, you respect them, you don't want them to be discriminated against, and you want them to live the best life they can. And for some folks, that's getting married. So I think that really has played a huge role in seeing that number increase.
It seems like it's changed society. It's probably also changed life for gay people in general. But even if you don't want to get married, it seems to have opened the door to a lot more tolerance, I think.
Yeah, this for sure is a conversation starter. It shows the LGBTQ community that change is possible. There are things that we would like to see progress in the future that are even more supportive of the LGBTQ community. But I think this marriage equality ruling just gives us a lot of hope and a lot of inspiration for the future, that if we put in the work, if we engage with Iowans and share our story, that we're going to continue to see support and hopefully see even more progress moving forward.
I know you had a conference here in Sioux City not that long ago that focused on the workplace and issues in the workplace. What kind of response did you get to that? I know you were expecting quite a few people.
We got a pretty good response for our first year. We knew coming in it was going to be smaller, which we anticipated and kind of planned for. So we had, I think, around 25 folks from the community, from businesses, community organizations that came and attended, which was our goal. Our goal was to have 25 come for our first year. But I think there's obviously a lot of work to do within the workplace. About half of the LGBTQ community is not completely out at work. And the research shows that when we are able to be our true authentic selves at work, we're more productive, have greater job satisfaction, and we're going to stay at that job longer. So not only is it the right thing to do, but we have this return on investment that we can show employers, that if they devote resources to creating inclusive environments for LGBTQ community members, they're going to save money as well. So that was kind of our first step in getting this work on the ground in the Siouxland area. And we're hopeful that we can continue to see that grow over the next year as well.
And don't you have a big gala coming up very soon?
We are celebrating 10 years of marriage at our 10th annual gala this Friday, which is really exciting. Our gala is our largest fundraising event that started out as a way of celebrating marriage equality. And since then, our organization pivoted, and now we celebrate LGBTQ equality as a whole. But this year, because of the 10-year anniversary, we are really excited, especially because we sold out for the first time ever about a month before the event, and have a record number of folks attending. Expect around 1,200 people coming to our 10th annual gala, which is really exciting.
That was Daniel Hoffman Zanell, president of the gay rights advocacy group One Iowa, talking about the 10th anniversary of the ruling that allowed gay couples to marry in Iowa. It was handed down April 3rd, 2009. One of the couples in Siouxland that have been married for a few years say they appreciate the equality that marriage gives gay and lesbian couples. Mike Gall and David Klenert of Orange City are active in all kinds of community issues, including a yearly pride celebration for Sioux County. I talked to the couple about their marriage and how they live in an area that is usually seen as the most socially conservative in Iowa.
I've been basically living in Sioux County since 2003-ish with college at Northwestern. And then Dave moved to town in 2013.
So yeah. We had been dating for 3 years. And then I moved down here in 2013. And then Mike proposed in 2016. And 2 weeks later, we got married here in Sioux County.
That's right.
Did anyone say to you, why are you moving to Sioux County? Everyone says that's the most conservative Republican place in Iowa.
No one ever told me that. Up in Minnesota, like, we didn't know, like, the history of Sioux County. It wasn't until a couple years later, one of my sisters, who lives up in Minnesota still, was talking to some coworkers and talking about how her brother and his husband lived in Orange City. And the coworker stopped dead and was like, wait, did you just say your brother is married to his husband in Sioux County? How does that happen? So that was kind of funny. So she called me and she's like, I didn't realize how conservative it was.
What kind of a response did you get when you guys got married?
Like, the town has a lot of heart. It's a lot of good people here. So, the people who knew us were excited for us. Those who only knew us a little bit were still excited for us.
Yeah, people like coworkers that work at Staples would say things like, well, it's about time you guys, got married, or other friends in various, aspects of the community would shake my hand and say congratulations. So, like Dave said, there's a lot of really nice folk. So, it was a pleasant response, I'd say, for us personally.
Do you think it's people sort of misunderstand what life is like up there at times because of all the press it gets?
I don't know if I want to say it's got a bad reputation, but it seems to be the main focus a lot of people put on this area is that, oh, it's so red, it's so conservative. You could say that about a lot of places in the country, especially in rural areas. I think what sets this place apart from a lot of places is that there is such a great community here. Everybody's looking out for each other. We all realize we're not really close to each other. So when you do see each other, you got to take care of others.
That's true.
It's funny because when I think of you guys, I think of you as sort of, in a good way, an old married couple. I think of you as being sort of settled.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, we try to be as, you know, or what do I say, like good ambassadors for our people in this town, too.
You've been instrumental in creating events that create sort of an outlet and a chance for people to talk and get together and talk to people that maybe they didn't know, gay people, straight people, all sorts of people. Can you talk a little bit about that?
You know, like, we're a married couple in Sioux County, but we weren't the first couple actually to get married in Sioux County. We know another couple that got married before us, and who knows, you know, there may have been more that have gotten married. So knowing that we're not alone as a community with the queer community, that's really cool, I think. So, you know, we're all busy people, you know, we can't, you know, hang out with everyone in the world, but it's nice to meet people, put faces to names. Even networking, that's been really positive, I think, with OC Pride and living in this town.
Yeah. And I mean, we come from a place of privilege. Like, we're two white dudes. We're gay, but, you know, like, we've got that opportunity to start a Pride Festival just to make sure everybody knows they're welcome wherever they are. So it's just been really great to get to know our neighbors, show the rest of the community who else is living here, and inviting them to come and hang out with us, as Mike calls it, our big, quirky, weird family reunion weekend.
That was Mike Gall and David Klenert of Orange City. The couple have been married since 2016.
You're listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. Actor Emilio Estevez recently released a film called The Public. The movie explores the issue of the homeless and public libraries and what happens when patrons decide not to leave on a cold night. Libraries across the country and even here in Sioux City serve as a place for the homeless to go. Siouxland Public Media's Sheila Brummer checked it out and filed this special report.
I love to use the library.
Linda Baker enjoys taking her 20-month-old granddaughter to the library in downtown Sioux City.
Sally, do you like the purple balloon book?
On this day, the two come for books and a little socializing.
Today we just went to the story time.
But they're not the only ones who spend time here.
I'm 54 years old. I'm born and raised here in Sioux City. I've been homeless 2 years now. And that's about it.
That's Ron, who doesn't want to share his last name.
What circumstances led to you being homeless?
Drugs and alcohol. I quit drinking 5 years ago, and I was just drugs, trying to get off that and everything. It just don't work. Went through treatment and everything, go back to the same habits.
Ron says he still uses marijuana and meth and occasionally hangs out at the library.
Just read books, chit-chat with people, see who comes and goes.
This is our public computer lab. If they want to apply for any kind of benefits, it's all online. So, yeah, they come up here and they use their library card.
Helen Rigdon is the director of the Sioux City Public Library.
I know the homeless situation has been a kind of a hot topic here in Sioux City.
Rigdon says on an average day, 10 to 20 people who appear to be homeless use her facility, more during extremely cold or hot weather.
You know, it's difficult. We want to be, you know, have empathy for them, but we also, you know, want to respect our other patrons too. Make them feel safe when they come in the library. We don't want the library to appear to be like a hotel or a flop house. So we do ask that people don't sleep. So, and sometimes that seems to be an issue, because the homeless, they probably don't sleep very well in the shelters and things.
Rigdon says her staff respects privacy, but does enforce rules on hygiene and what people can haul into the building.
Some of them were bringing in up to 50 grocery bags, and what they consider their possessions aren't what we really consider. I mean, because they have some of it's trash, some of it is bedding, and so we have to watch for pests and things like that. Yeah, I think there probably are some people that aren't comfortable around them, and so they might stay away. But really, a lot of people, it doesn't seem to bother them. They just come on in.
The library also turned to the Sioux City Police Department to hire off-duty officers for security.
The library understands that that is a public place. And unless somebody, displays extremely bad behavior, the library is reluctant, and they should be, to deny service because, sometimes these folks are using library services. So there's a balance in there. There's a delicate balance. You want people to feel free to and safe to go use the facilities, and I think that the library is a safe place to go.
That's Sioux City Police Chief Rex Mueller, who says homelessness is multifaceted, at times a substance abuse issue, mental health issue, or both.
Over the years, we've kind of criminalized homelessness, which is not a solution. Because people say, well, I don't want to see this. This is not the way a good community looks. I appreciate the appearance. I appreciate the concerns that downtown businesses have in dealing with this. Everybody has a valid point of view on some of this, but what we need is creative and more long-term approaches. Getting the hospitals involved, getting the mental health facilities involved, law enforcement, business owners, the city. This isn't a problem that is solved by one single entity. It takes the dedication of the entire community to work on it.
One of the groups also helping the homeless, the warming shelter.
Our mission in a whole is just to make sure nobody freezes to death.
Lindsay Landrum is the manager of the shelter that relies solely on local donations and serves on average 75 to 80 people a night.
I think any city in general has an issue with homelessness. We have a huge housing issue here. There's no affordable housing or not enough affordable housing. To see what they go through every single day, the hardships they go through every single day, and then you think about yourself and you're like, man, this, I messed up my eggs this morning and that was difficult for me, but they're literally living on the street. So you have to take a step back and just provide way more empathy to them. And let them know that you're here to help them and be there for them and be an ear for them and a voice for them also. There's a huge misunderstanding of homelessness and homeless people in general. They're not bad people. They just had a bad situation happen, and it's been hard for them to get back on their feet.
Ron uses the warming shelter. We met him at their day shelter at the old St. Boniface School on West 7th Street.
I was incarcerated. Went to prison and everything, in and out of prison. Living that lifestyle, criminal activities, getting trouble and everything, just bad habits.
Ron says he first went to prison back in 1983 for sexual assault and burglary offenses. He blames alcohol for leading him into a life of crime.
What kind of future do you hope you have?
That right there is a tough question to answer. I have no clue. No clue where I want to go. I would like to think, go the right way and everything, do better and everything, but I always slip. I always put myself, harm's way and doing things I ain't supposed to be doing. One thing leads to another and I wind back up here.
For now, Ron roams the streets, sleeps at shelters or friends' couches, and occasionally ends up at the library.
Just hang out during the day and everything, but then you get tired and you don't fall asleep and then they kick you out.
Here. You wanted to put on your jacket?
Linda Baker, who plans to return to the library with her granddaughter very soon, doesn't mind sharing this public space with those who don't have a place to call their own.
It hasn't concerned me.
In Sioux City for Siouxland Public Media News, I'm Sheila Brummer.
You're listening to The Exchange on Siouxland Public Media. I'm Mary Hartnett. With the NCAA basketball tournaments drawing to a close, Jim Scopp has his mind on a woman some would have called a long shot, a woman born right here in Hawarden who went all the way to the top.
Hawarden's Hope Emerson. Let me do the math. Were she born a century later, she might have just now concluded a stellar basketball career at USD. Well, why cut her short? Think of her as a Hawkeye. Wherever she played, she scored because even now, a century later, Hope Emerson would still tower over much of the opposition. Hope Emerson was born 1897 when the game of basketball was just a five-year-old. It would take another decade to put young women in uniform, even here in Iowa, where girls' basketball went big time decades before it did elsewhere. Hope Emerson stood 6'2" tall, and she was no drink of water. It's not nice to talk about weight, but Ms. Emerson was never shy about it herself. That's why it's so amazing to think of her as a movie star. She was. She died in 1960, but any movie buff worth his or her tickets will remember Hope Emerson's face, even if she hasn't appeared on the big screen for 50 years. I'm trying not to be boorish, but it's fair to say Hope Emerson's face was as formidable as her frame. This Hope Emerson, after all, was no small wonder. Then again, maybe she was. She was born here, just up the road in Hawarden. And it's a wonder Miss Emerson had a career in motion pictures, pitched her tent among Hollywood's elites, and played unforgettable roles in movies and TV serials. What's more, in the 1930s, Hawarden girls didn't generally take off for Hollywood when they were 100 pounds heavier than 1,000 beauties busting tables and dreaming of a break in California. Hope Emerson did all of that. And she was glamorous in her own way, even if her most memorable character was a sadistic prison matron in Caged, a 1950s psychodrama, in a role that earned her an Oscar nomination. By all reports, Hope Emerson was a kind and gentle giant. In Cry of the City, 1948 film noir crime drama, her role as Rose Given, a masseuse, required her to choke Richard Conte. Conte claimed she hated doing the acting, found it sorely difficult. There were better roles. In Westward, The Woman, 1952, Ms. Emerson played a mail-order bride in a wagon train of women bound for the single men of California. She used her size to great advantage when she literally deadlifted Spencer Tracy in a rom-com, Adam's Rib, in 1949. For a long time, She was the voice of Elsie the cow in radio commercials for Borden Milk and appeared in dozens of supporting roles on TV. If you wonder how a Haywarden girl with her astounding wingspan ended up in Hollywood, the answer is easy. Her mother, Josie, had three children, two of which, both boys, died very young. Josie's only child, her daughter, was groomed for the stage from age three by a mom who loved it herself. Josie Emerson was her own vaudeville act. She determined early on to bring her daughter into that world, and did. Together, when they weren't performing themselves, they'd drive to Sioux City to watch movies starring men and women hope would eventually count as friends. Her father died young, but Hope and Josie never really let each other alone. Even though she played a woman to be married on a wagon train full of mail-order brides, throughout a long Hollywood career, Hope Emerson, who never got married or had children, always took care of her mom. And that's why, should you stop by Haywarden sometime, you should drive up to the cemetery, take the first little road north, cross a gravel lane, keep watching the graves on the edge, and you'll find the pink Emerson stone, father, mother, and daughter. Pull over, pay your respects. There they are together, like always. They'd enjoy your applause.
The odds were 100-1 against me. The world thought the heights were too high to climb. But people from Missouri never incensed me. Oh, I wasn't a bit concerned, for from history I had learned how many, many times the worm had turned.
Support for Small Wonders on Siouxland Public Media comes from the Daniels Osborne Law Firm in the Ho-Chunk Center in downtown Sioux City, serving the needs of clients in real estate transactions, business formation and guidance, and personal estate planning. More information is available on Facebook or at danielsosborne.com. And finally, a note today that Woodbury County is planning ahead to repair roads and bridge improvements. The Woodbury County Board of Supervisors last night approved a plan for fixing roads and bridges, with the projects totaling a combined $30.1 million through fiscal year 2023 through 2024. Over many years, gravel has worn away, and county officials say the best fix would be to give up to a 6-inch layer of gravel on those rural gravel roads. The county sets a new 5-year plan each April, and it's shared with the Iowa Department of Transportation. A lot of projects are on the list for a few years until completed, until the last 5-year plan totaled $29.3 million. And that's it for this edition of The Exchange. Thanks to Sheila Brummer. I'm Mary Hartnett. We'll see you next week.